Welcome back to Scarswell. It's If here, taking in a glorious view of the estuary from our upstairs window. Being so close to the water, we at the Tourist Information Centre think a lot about what goes on beneath the waves off Scarswell. Brightly coloured fish, jovially dancing and making merriment. Discarded needles. Sea monsters. Lost souls. Perhaps the writer of this story has a rather vivid imagination. Or maybe, just maybe, there's more to the open sea than meets the eye. I only wanted to buy a ticket for the Scar Estuary Ferry, but I'd stepped into some commotion. I was walking across the car park, its lines faded, its asphalt uneven, an abandoned car with a police aware sign in the back windscreen. And then there was a voice raised in anger. I couldn't see whoever was staffing the ticket booth, but I could see the long, gangly man who was remonstrating with them. Not easy to imagine what could have caused an argument in a place like this. Usually the buying of a ticket for the ferry is a simple operation. I should know. I've been doing it for decades. The tickets were actual tickets, printed on slips of thermal paper. It felt as though it would be letting the side down if, say, they ever switched to some system where you scanned your phone against a reader. By now, the ritual was all that remained. After all, I could always take the car into Scarswell instead. You have to, a man was saying. You don't have a choice. The girl working in the ticket booth was practically cowering. I really don't think I should, she was saying. That's not up to you, the man said. Whatever else he had to say was strangled in his mouth, because he saw that I was standing close behind his shoulder and was thrown off course. The man was young or youngish, most likely not much older than 30, and he had a sallow and distasteful expression. A lot of people my age, I thought, might look at him and imagine he must be on drugs. To me, though, he just looked tired. Exasperated, perhaps, with taking part in all the niceties and rituals that happen in between getting where you need to go and doing what you need to do. He was wearing a bluish baseball cap with the stitching beginning to fray around the brim, which threw more shade still over his large and soft face. Is everything all right? I said. I spoke as brightly as I could, and did little all the same to relieve the tension. All the nervous energy was stuck in the little roofed-over area alongside the ticket office. But the girl behind the window, at least, looked grateful for my intervention. The man in the baseball cap, for his part, had started to gawp at me, and I wasn't sure which of the two of them to look at. The girl selling tickets didn't look a day older than 18, and she was wearing a big, oversized sweatshirt and a loose ponytail. She took her chance to fill the silence. He says he's going to jump off the boat, she said. I turned to the man. Are you? I had surprised myself. I didn't want to be drawn into the middle of whatever dispute these two were having, but now here I was, doing so with great gusto. I couldn't decide if I sounded like a schoolteacher pressing the accused party for a confession, or like I was just idly interested in whatever he was doing. Like I'd just been told that he was training for a triathlon, or that he was the mayor's cousin. Are you really? Fascinating. There was nothing I could do about it now, anyway. Perhaps I'm a natural diplomat. Or perhaps it was just because I was the first disinterested party to have stumbled into their altercation. Both of them, now, were looking to me as mediator. Yeah, the man said. I've been saying I'm going to do it for ages, so now I'm going to do it. Why do you want to do that? I really was interested. I looked past his shoulder, along the half-mile length of the pier, where the waters of the estuary poured dirt green over grey beneath the boards. It was a turgid Saturday morning, and winter was overdue to give way to spring. The sky over Scarswell looked rancid and threatened rain. I couldn't imagine there would ever be a good time to take a dip here, in the opaque waters with all their floating bits, with the oil refinery looming on one horizon and the container port on the other, to say nothing of the great propeller screws of the cruise ships. All the same, now had to be one of the worst times of all. "'Cause I've had enough,' he said. "'I'm going to end it all.' There was, I thought, something awfully petulant about this. A sort of go-ahead-and-see-if-I-don't tone. And I may have risen to it. I wanted to get on the ferry and get on with my morning, and I didn't much appreciate this young man's plans being placed ahead of my own. All the same, I hadn't considered that he might want to kill himself when he said he'd jump off the ferry. It didn't make a great deal of sense to me. "'Wouldn't you be better jumping off a bridge or something?' I said. The girl behind the counter looked scandalized. "'You can't say that,' she said. She sounded quite upset. "'What if he does it?' "'I will, too,' the man said. And I wasn't sure anymore if he was referring to the bridge option or to the ferry option. I had thoughts of my own about the Scar Estuary, and how inhospitable it would be to a man of normal length and breadth and volume. Looking past this strange man, I could see the frenetic tumbling of the waves, the raw power they contained. The raw everything else they contained. Whether he fell from a great distance or a modest one, it may not make so big a difference after all. Neither the rangy man nor the worried girl was speaking to the other anymore. It was as if they had both decided that all conversation would now be relayed through me, like they were a disbanding rock outfit and I was their lawyer. I would be here until the bitter end. It might even have become, somehow, morally incumbent upon me to come up with a solution. I didn't want to be anybody's peacemaker. I am singularly unqualified to negotiate with fragile and troubled minds. I'd imagined that I could be on the return ferry well before the middle of the day, hopefully having picked up the pair of sturdy gloves my wife wanted to use in the garden, and a couple of pieces of salmon for lunch to boot. Well, I mean, look, let's think about this for a moment, I said. If he's going to do it, there's nothing either of us can do to stop him. Yeah, exactly, the man said with triumph, and I held up my hand to let him know I wasn't finished. But, I said, here's an important detail. If he chooses instead to jump off a bridge, he doesn't actually have to buy a ticket. Nobody can really be said to feel responsible, other than himself. So you might argue, even. I turned back now to address the man directly. So you might argue that, really, it would be unethical for you to do this. If you choose to jump off the ferry, and we leave aside entirely the question as to whether you would actually die under those circumstances, you would be implicating this young lady in your plans. You're making her an accessory to the crime, and I don't think that's fair. As the wind picked up and howled around us, the man began to nod. It was almost concerning to see that this made sense to him. I'd really rather he didn't, the girl said. Didn't what? I said. Didn't kill himself or didn't buy a ferry ticket? Well, both, I suppose. The man acknowledged now that he had been listening. She still has to let me buy one, he said. If I decide to buy one. He was wearing an extremely straggly sort of raincoat. It looked like the kind of garment that was once very expensive, but had withered over time until it was a flimsy and shapeless shell of its former self. It probably still kept the rain out, I thought, by means of whatever durable waterproofing method they applied to raincoats before they were mass-produced in sweatshops. Whale oil or something like that. The coat looked to be older than he was. Look, at this rate, I'm going to miss the ferry. Can you agree to sell him one? I said, turning to the girl. If you can agree that you won't jump off the ferry, I said, turning now to the man. They both gave grudging nods, even though this was essentially the least desirable outcome for everyone involved. Wait, the girl said. Doesn't make sense though, does it? If he's not going to jump off, why does he still need a ticket? The man seemed in no hurry to answer. He had begun digging around in a pocket, and I found myself hoping he was looking only for money. I fixed him with a sort of, well, gesture. Gotta get to the River Triss Bridge, haven't I? He said. Fine, the girl said, washing her hands of her concern for this man with surprising haste now she'd heard me reason that, technically, she would no longer be responsible for anything he may or may not do. She seemed instead to be ticked off with me, as though I'd done something to anger her. Single then, 6:50. The man was off along the pier the second he had the ticket in his hand, the planks grey and creaking beneath his feet. I would have to jog in order not to miss the ferry, but I had no wish to catch up. I stood for the whole crossing on the outer deck, between the two seating areas at either end of the boat. The engines juddered. The waters of the Scar lurched. The man in the raincoat, I saw, had disappeared off into the aft covered area. I felt, now, that it was my sworn duty to stand and ensure he didn't try to make a break for it. If he came bursting out, I thought, and tried to vault over the railing, I could grab him around the middle. With any luck, somebody would be on hand to help wrestle him to the deck. It would come as a great affront now if he violated the terms of our agreement. The agreement I had so carefully brokered between him and the girl selling tickets. Best of all would be if, upon returning in a couple of hours' time, I were able to tell her that I saw him safely across to the other side. Probably he was just bluffing, or something even less sophisticated than that, trying to cause a scene. More than likely he had some very benign business to attend to in town. Just like me, just like the two or three others who had boarded the ferry long before us both. The first stirrings of rain, or the first that I could be sure were rain, and not just the spray of the engine starting up, began somewhere in the middle of the crossing. I looked off the edge, and at the water which turned beneath me like so much roiling green soup in a blender, and I couldn't keep from wondering how long a man would last in there. I was reminded of a story my father had told me. The two of us, three possibly, with my mum sitting off to the side if she wasn't standing at the sink, were digesting our weeknight dinner. When he was younger, he said, along with my uncle and my grandfather, and a friend of my grandfather's who owned the boat. He used to go fishing along the south coast, not far from Scarswell, looking for conger eels. Enormous they were. So big they had to use great sturdy rods, line as thick as your little finger, and whole live mackerel as bait. They'd spear them through the upper jaw, he said, far enough forward that you didn't put them out of commission right away. You needed them to thrash around a bit. My father wasn't the kind of man prone to exaggeration. He was the kind of man who could say things like, no pain, no gain, with a straight face. And he lived by that maxim too, as long as the pain involved wasn't his. I thought of glistening fish skins, scales catching the dim rays of sun which fell on Scarswell of decades past. One of the ferry staff bumped into my back and I grasped the wet railing in front of me. "I'd get inside if I were you, mate," he said. The rain was beginning to fall now in palpable sheets, and I wasn't the best dressed for it. The south coast chill was seeping in through the few layers I had, the damp of the rain making its way ever so steadily in the direction of my bones. All the same, some sense of duty, or of fear, kept me where I was. "I'm all right," I told him, and he shrugged. A lot of what my father impressed upon me was the sheer violence of the matter. A conger eel, and here again I don't think he was exaggerating, is truly enormous. Regularly, routinely, they're 5 or 6 feet long, and it's not unheard of to come across one twice that big. Not in the Scar estuary, anyway. Nor should you be surprised to encounter specimens weighing up to 100 pounds. Trying to land one must have been a nightmare. Is it still called landing a fish, I wonder, when you're on a boat? And isn't eel even a fish? Just a vast rope of muscle, really. As long as a man and half as heavy, thrashing around like nobody's business. And the jaws on them, too. Back then, I had sat there and tried to visualize this. Tried to imagine what one might look like, there between us on the kitchen floor. Its undulating body would surely take chips of plywood out of the cabinet doors. It would wrap itself like a coiled spring around one of the legs of the dinner table. It went without saying that it would bite me, surely, take a big, wet mouthful out of the flesh of my calf just as easily as me tucking into my Friday night fish and chips. "They bark," my dad said. "That's the worst thing." I must have misheard him. Surely. Whoever heard of a barking fish? He insisted that it was true. Once you had it out of the water, its gills helplessly exposed to squalling air, a desperate conger would make the most foul, unearthly sound. He could only compare it to that of a barking dog. I could scarcely imagine the cacophony. The great long, sleek mats flipping over and over on the wood or fiberglass of a boat's deck, coiling and uncoiling itself, its skull rattling off the surface, all the while making echoing, pained yelps like a dog. Something more wild than a dog, even. A fox at the very least. Or a wolf. I sensed that my father would never admit to it, but I wondered if he had been coerced into these trips as the youngest, brought along to build character and to bring home the most undesirable of dinners. Though few gave it much thought, under the looming white shapes of the cruise ships, the smaller traffic buzzing to and fro, the pouring waves, the unearthly, tangled mess of the oil refinery, the waters of the Scar are packed. They make for great fishing, they say. Bass and flounders and grey mullet, too. I've heard it said that you can even eat mussels and clams from these waters, but I've never rushed to try them. Not once, at any rate, could I be induced to go fishing with my father. I suspect he never forgave me for it. I stepped to one side as the ferry arrived. The engines were killed, and they started rattling the iron gangplank down onto the dock. I heard the slapping sounds of the waves against the fiberglass sides of the ferry. The weather showed no signs of calming, and I wondered what strange horrors could be lurking beneath us. I had resolved to wait, to survey and assess each passenger as they came off the boat. Whatever happened from there, I decided, was really up to him. the man in the raincoat and cap. If he walked the half hour or so to the tryst bridge, to take in the view back down to the water from whence he had come, and then to throw himself off, to pierce the surface of the water like a weighted fish hook and not emerge again, I couldn't be held responsible. There were just a few straggling passengers emerging from the seating areas, most of them pulling their coats defensively around them as they stepped out into the squall, down onto the dock and to whatever business they had in the city on a weekend morning. It was amazing that the River Scar ferry still ran at all, really. It was only enduringly popular with cruise ship watchers, and watching cruise ships struck me as the height of misery. The only thing worse than watching a cruise ship, to me, would be being trapped on one. A gigantic, floating vector of disease steaming down the Algarve, sharing a table with long-necked estate agents who do this four times a year. You'll need to move along there, mate. Sorry? It was the same man from before. A deckhand, or whatever his job was. He was nodding down at the gangplank, motioning clearly that I ought to be on my merry way. Sorry, I said again. I'll only be a second. I'm just waiting for... My words drifted off into nothingness. I pointed instead to the seating area closest to me. Sticking my head around the door, I saw that it was empty, and so I turned to the one at the other end. All the while I went on mumbling vaguely, just following my finger to where I knew the younger man from before would be. Come along then, I might say to him. Look sharp. The passenger area smelled oily. Some kind of maritime lubricant, perhaps. Or something they applied to the wooden benches which passed for seating, and which were shiny and almost reflective, polished to a luster by the rearward attentions of harried mothers and wriggling children. And when I peered from one row to the next, and returned afterward to the other end of the boat, it became impossible to ignore the fact. There was nobody there. Here at the Scarswell Tourist Information Office, we rely on our listeners. If you enjoy our stories, consider supporting us on Patreon, and find our newsletter, merch, and more at scarswellonsea.com. See you next time.